Welcome back to the Clear Admit MBA Admissions Podcast. I'm your host, Graham Richmond, and joining me today is fellow host Alex Brown. Alex, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having me again, Graham.
So this is another edition of Wiretaps, where we're going to take some time to look at your candidacies, those of our listeners and site users who are posting their candidacies principally to ApplyWire, where they get advice on where they should be applying and whether their profile matches the goals that they're kind of setting. So we're going to dive in and you know, give hopefully some insightful feedback to some of our site users who've been sharing their profiles. As we've said on past episodes, what we love about Wiretaps is it gives us a chance to really communicate with you, the site user and the podcast listener, and ideally, you know, share feedback on specific candidacies. And I would almost argue, much like people learn via the case method at Harvard Business School, this is kind of our attempt to impart admissions wisdom, admission strategy wisdom to our listeners via the use of cases. You know, we're looking at real candidates with real challenges and trying to help them, you know, solve those challenges and get into the best schools possible. So, Alex, thanks again for, you know, taking part in this. I love talking through these candidates. And you have selected four candidates for this week. And it's a really diverse group. Great job, as always, picking those. So let's start with the first one. This person has a GRE score of 320 and a GPA of 3.8. She has 4 years of work experience, is located in the United States and in Washington, D.C., working in consulting and hoping to use the MBA to make a move into tech and or nonprofit, you know, and social interest kind of work. And the companies that she listed as targets were Amazon, Google, IBM, Microsoft, Oracle. So a number of options there. And again, she, you know, hopes to start in the fall of 2020. Target schools are Duke, LBS, Michigan, and Kellogg. So what's your take? I know that you did actually provide a comment for this person. And she, maybe you can elaborate a little on, because she also mentioned some things in her notes as well about her candidacy. Yeah.
Sure. I mean, it seems to me like this candidate, what she wants to do is work for a big tech firm in their sort of corporate social responsibility initiatives as her goal or as her principal goal. So quite honestly, I think that, you know, working in that space is quite laudable and having a desire for that. And so my initial thinking with this candidate is her work experience looks really good, actually, and it seems like she's performed well at work. So it's not just that the work experience itself is interesting, but there appears to be evidence that she's sort of done well relative to her peers and so forth. And that's something that the admissions committee will be alert to look for, is sort of, all right, interesting work experience, but how have you done within the scope of that experience? And it seems like she has done well. And not only that, but she has also been quite involved in extracurricular activities, which again is something that the admissions committees do like to see. They like to see people that are impact people, both at work and if their schedule permits, outside of work, and things about which they're passionate. And it does seem like this candidate fits both of those buckets. So I think that's very good. She has a GPA of 3.8, which is a BSBA in finance. So there's some notion that obviously she's smart too, which is very good. My concern with the candidate is her GRE score. And it's not a bad score. It's a 320. It's a little bit on the lower end of the range for the schools that the candidate's targeting. But it's, I would say it's within range, but on the lower end. The quant side of the GRE score is a little bit more of a concern at 155 versus the verbal side, which is strong. And the reason why I'm sort of focused on the GRE here is I do believe that this is the weakest element of her candidacy. And because it's the weakest element of her candidacy, it also happens to be the most important element of her candidacy. So whilst business schools don't simply focus on test scores, and we absolutely talk about this idea, it's a truly holistic approach in evaluation, which it is. Each candidate will have a weaker element in their candidacy, whatever that is. Even a superstar, there's going to be some element that's slightly weaker, and it's that weakest element that is going to be the most important element of your candidacy, because it's the one that could drag you back a little bit. And, you know, finally, to sort of wrap this notion up, I think if she could retake the GRE and gain, you know, 2 or 3 more points, I mean, we're talking small margins here, I guess, it elevates her prospects at the very top schools.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, for me, the issue is that, I don't know how to put it, but I would almost say that her GRE, as it presently stands, is almost like sort of tarnishing that shiny 3.8 GPA, because it, you know, there's an interaction between the standardized test score and the GPA, where if someone has a 4.0 GPA and then they absolutely bomb a standardized test, suddenly you say, well, how good was that 4.0? Like, what's the school that they went to? So I suddenly started thinking about, okay, you know, great grades and an interesting undergraduate path in terms of, you know, there's finance, there's Spanish, you know, there's kind of both the quantitative and the qualitative. But then I started to think, well, when I saw the GRE, and in particular the quant score, which I believe is at around the 59th percentile, that's what a 155 translates to. So I started to say, well, you know, where did she get this undergraduate degree and how rigorous was the quantitative portion of that degree? So that was what jumped out at me. I think we might have mentioned she's an Indian American woman, so probably her parents probably born in India or something, and you know, was maybe grown up in the States or something. So, but that's a, you know, the Asian, I would say writ large, the Asian American portion of the pool is pretty competitive, right? So that's, you know, so the test score, I agree, like this is someone who could probably go to an M7 school, or, you know, certainly top 15, top 16. But I worry that it's almost like if she doesn't retake the test and at least give it a shot to get that, you know, quant score up, she's kind of missing an opportunity.
I mean, that's exactly my point. She lists Duke and Ross and Kellogg and London Business School. And, you know, she may well now be competitive for those schools, and certainly Duke and Ross. But the point is, if she jumps that GRE score up just you know, a few additional points, then I agree with you. She's M7 caliber with strong execution on the applications. I mean, she's still got to really deliver. And she, you know, you talk about Kellogg, you're talking about other schools sort of in that very top band.
Yeah, agreed. I was actually, I mean, did you puzzle at all over the school selection here? I kind of was just sort of wondering, what is it that drove this list? I mean, these are all great schools, right? So Fuqua, LBS, Ross, Kellogg, they're all terrific schools. They're sort of geographically spread around. You've got Duke in the Southeast, you know, well, Michigan and Kellogg are both in the Midwest, and then LBS kind of across the pond. So I was trying to figure out what drove this, because, you know, I think that these schools all have some strength in nonprofit and you know, kind of sustainability, or, you know, the types of things that she's interested in doing. But I don't know. I mean, I feel like there are other schools, too, that jump out at me as being quite strong in that domain as well. So I didn't really understand what was driving the list. Did you have a sense from the comments you had with her?
I would agree with you there. I was probably looking to see maybe Yale would be on there. I think Stern's very good in this domain. But there's certainly other schools that could have been considered. And, you know, if she bumps the GRE score up, I mean, you're looking at schools like Wharton and, you know, maybe even Harvard or whatever. But, you know, why not, right? But it's, to me, it's down to that test score.
Yeah. And I think I guess I could make a small plug for the, you know, at ClearAdmit, we think that, you know, rankings are really nuanced, and we don't really prescribe people to, you know, kind of just look at a single ranking and make your decisions. But we do run a series of articles where we try to draw attention to schools with strengths in specific domains. And there is a piece that you can find on our website where we looked at schools that were notable for social impact. So I would recommend that this candidate read that article. I think it's just, you know, clearadmit.com MBA-rankings/social impact or something of that. You can find it very easily on our site just by going to the rankings menu. But I think she may want to read that article because I feel like, you know, there's some schools on the list and that were mentioned in that article that aren't on her list. And, you know, some of them are M7, but not all of them. So I think that would be a good place for her to start. Anything else on this candidate before we move on to our next victim for wiretaps?
No, I think we should move on. I think, like I say, this is a very strong candidate with one weakness that they have within their... it's something they can at least attempt to fix. Which is great because, you know, some candidates will have a weakness that they can't do anything about, right? So she has a very good upside.
Okay. So our next wiretaps contestant is an environmental scientist who, let's see, GRE 321, GPA 3.4, 5 years of work experience. This person's located in Denver and would like to stay on the kind of western half of the United States post-MBA. They, you know, hoping to start in the fall of 2020. They're considering W.P. Carey at Arizona State, Georgetown, Rice, UT, Austin, McCombs, Vanderbilt Owen, and perhaps Wisconsin as well. They did mention that they intend to take the GRE one more time, so hoping to push that score up. They're currently doing kind of environmental science field work and are hoping to transition to the renewable energy sector. And they also mentioned, and this is kind of interesting because I'm not sure we've dealt with this before, but this is a reapplicant. So this person applied last year to business school with a 660 on the GMAT and a very weak quant score, they mentioned. And they did get some interviews at a couple of schools, but it didn't work out for them. And they have since taken on more leadership, but it's a small company, so their title hasn't changed. And they're just, you know, working to kind of reapply here. So why don't you walk us through your take on their chances at this selection of schools and just what you think of them in general?
Yeah, I mean, I like this candidate. Well, I like all the candidates, apparently, but there we go. But, you know, as a reapplicant, you're coming back to the process. Your applications will be stronger this year, generally, than in the previous year, just by the very fact that you've learned about the process. So that's point number one in this candidate's favour. Point number two is he or she, I don't know if they've declared that, has additional leadership experience from this upcoming year. So there's some strengthened aspects of the work experience. Don't get hung up on no additional promotion, but talk about the stories and the actual experiences that you've had and how they translate into leadership, right? So that's a positive going into this season. They've gone from a 660 GMAT with a weaker quant score to a 321 GRE. The quant score is slightly less than the verbal score, but it's pretty slim margins, quant score of 159. But they're retaking the GRE one more time. If they can nudge that score up one or two points further, that will be very good.
Yeah, and 159 on the quant is actually a 73rd percentile, which is, you know, that's in range at this point. And so their test score is decent, I think, certainly for the schools on their target list. But I think it's interesting to know that they're going to retake because that if they could nudge it even further up, that opens up some additional doors potentially. So,
I mean, and that's my point. So it's very good. Like, so last season, this person was invited to interview at Owen and at Rice Jones, and ultimately, I'm guessing they weren't successful. And they've included Rice and Owen as schools that they're reapplying to with a number of other schools. So some of which I'm guessing are first-time applications, so that's perfectly fine. As a reapplicant, so the schools that this person's reapplying to, I would absolutely suggest getting in the first round. As an admissions officer, I want to see the reapplicants coming in the first round. They have little excuse delaying their application. If there is a reason, maybe if they've got a very recent promotion, they want to play that out for an extra month or two, they need to explain that, I think, in the optional essay. So come into the first round with the schools that they're reapplying to, and then they can certainly go into the second round, possibly with new schools on their list that they're not reapplying to if they can't get everything into the first round. I think this person could be undershooting a little
bit. Yeah, that's exactly, yeah, I agree.
In terms of their target schools. And I suggested considering schools like Duke and Anderson. They want to be in the Western US after their MBA. Hence, sort of, I just thought Anderson would from a geographic standpoint, would be a good sort of reach school, possibly. Duke, in sort of the environmental science side of things. But schools at that level, they should be taking a bit of a shot at, I think. I'd hate for them to underachieve based on the fact that they probably feel a bit wounded from the process having been blanked this season.
Yeah, when I saw this candidacy, I mean, first I was excited to get to talk about a reapplicant because I think, I think a lot of our listeners may know I was a reapplicant to business school. I struck out my first time, or more or less struck out, or didn't get what I wanted. So I had to do it again. So I always like to see reapplicants. And this person, you know, it seems like they're doing all the right things. They, you know, retook the test, or they went and took a different test and have a decent score now. They're even looking to further it by taking it one more time. So, you know, a lot of things are in place. What struck me the most was just that they have this really interesting non-traditional background that's then tied to a set of very logical career goals in a space that's kind of a hot spot, you know, in terms of renewable energy is a big, you know, a big thing. And I think they have some schools on their target list that make good sense for that. Thinking of McCombs at UT Austin. So I feel like there's a lot to like about this candidate. The work experience seems really strong. I love seeing someone who's at a small company doing big things. And I think the one potential pitfall would be if their work involves a lot of like, kind of field work and sort of jargony, sciencey stuff, they're going to need to make sure that both they and the recommenders are speaking to the admissions committee in, you know, kind of plain language that is readily understood. And that's not to say they need to dumb things down and assume their reader is an idiot, but they need to assume that their reader is highly intelligent but has sort of zero understanding of the field that this person is in. So that's going to be important. But I personally think if they could nudge this score up ever so slightly, they could cast a wider net or aim higher, right, as you said. And I was thinking, you know, yeah, sure, UCLA. I was even thinking about maybe Haas at Berkeley. I mean, I think it depends on how the score, you know, turns out and what they want. But it's, yeah, I couldn't help but think that maybe they were undershooting a little bit.
You bring up another really interesting point. This person's worked in environmental science, doing environmental science field work. My guess is they're not working with MBAs and have a lot of sort of MBAs in their networks. And, you know, a lot of our candidates are coming from MBA feeder industries and so forth. So they know the process. They know people. They do have a bit of a leg up in the process from that perspective. You know, if your best mate's doing an MBA at a particular school, you can quiz them on their experience and so on and so forth and get some real good insights. But if you're in the sciences field and doing field work and so forth, you're probably not hanging out with a lot of MBAs. So hopefully the additional year and really thinking about it has allowed this person to engage more with the MBA communities to then just help strengthen their overall sort of execution of their applications.
Yeah. So to the environmental scientist who posted, we're rooting for you. Good luck with the reapplication. And yeah, obviously, you know, I would say with anyone who we feature on Wiretaps, we try to alert you via the comments on the posts. Alex has been sharing that and getting folks to, you know, listen to the podcast. But, you know, to the extent that you have follow-on questions or want to continue the dialogue, by all means, you know, just comment on your post and we'll try to get back to you as quickly as possible. Let's move to our third kind of guest on Wiretaps. This one is a really kind of the kind of candidate, I guess, along with the last one we just talked about, that you don't see that often in the MBA admissions process. So I say that because this person, their pre-MBA career is working in the U.S. House of Representatives, U.S. Department of Labor, U.S. Department of Commerce. So this is a government worker. They've worked for two members of Congress and two cabinet members, working in like legislative affairs and policy. And, you know, they mentioned that they would like to kind of sort of figure out a way to combine, you know, what they've been doing with business. And I think the example they give is, you know, help businesses kind of make to invest in these kind of opportunity zones that have been set up around the U.S. And so this person basically, you know, they gave us their numbers, 327 on the GRE and a 3.79 GPA. They've been working for 6 years, so a fair amount of experience. They are based in Washington, D.C. In the U.S. And again, like most of our guests on the show here that we featured, they're going to try to go off to business school in the fall of 2020. And they did ask specifically about whether the GRE is strong enough and whether their school selection is solid. And the school selection, for our listeners who are curious, is as of now Duke, Harvard, Notre Dame, Oxford, Stanford, Chicago, UNC, and Wharton. So a lot of schools on that list. Alex, what's your take on this candidacy?
Yeah, very interesting candidate. Obviously, from a work experience standpoint, the work experience is quite untraditional, non-traditional, sort of almost unique in the candidate pool, which can be a very good thing, as long as the person makes a very strong case of why they want the MBA and the transition into the sector post the MBA, make good sense of all that. And it seems like they have a good idea of what they want to do to work into business investment in newly created opportunity zones, whatever all that means, but I'm sure it makes perfect sense. So from that perspective, and you know, 6 years of experience, this person seems really good. Strong GPA, 3.79. GRE looks strong, 3.27. A little bit on the lighter side on the quant, 159, as we talked about in our previous candidates. My biggest question for this candidate was, what was their undergraduate degree? And is there much quant-related coursework? Because I don't think we question whether this candidate is smart or not. Clearly, they've done well at work. They've got the GPA. I mean, this is a smart person, but have they had the quant sort of training in their background? If they haven't, that's perfectly fine, but they need to sort of set themselves up for their MBA experience by taking one or two quant courses now, just to get them ready for the first semester of the MBA, right? And the admissions committee would like to see them do that, and they should be proactive about that rather than wait for the admissions committee to potentially conditionally admit them based on completing some quant related coursework. So that would be my biggest piece of advice for this candidate. I'm not sure of the gender of the candidate. I don't think that was declared, but the target schools was reasonably all over the map, almost literally. You've got Stanford on the West Coast, and you've got Oxford in the UK, and you know, Harvard and Notre Dame. Like, you've got quite a breadth of level of competitiveness of schools, as well as geographic selection of schools. So that might need focusing on a little bit more. And schools like Yale and Tuck, I thought, might have been represented in the list, and they're not. So anyway, that was my initial reaction.
So on the school list, I made a note in the margin here, strange list of schools. I mean, not that any of the schools are bad. I was trying to figure out what links them all together. And I also would say that we do see candidates, you know, pursuing a range of schools. That just shows, you know, a good strategy in terms of, you know, want to have your reach schools and some others that are right in your wheelhouse and maybe a safety. I do think, though, that this candidate maybe has too broad of a range. So I was a little puzzled by that, especially given, you know, the numbers that they have to work with. And I did have a quant concern note. You know, the it's not so much that the GRE is fine. I think they're at the 73rd percentile in the math section, which isn't the best that one sees, but it's you know, probably enough. But I agree, if given that they've been working in government, you know, if I'm an admissions reader, I'm thinking, okay, what does the first semester look like in business school for this candidate? And you and I know that the first semester typically has, you know, micro or macroeconomics, accounting, finance, operations, I mean, all these courses that are fairly quantitative and they kind of front load the curriculum. I think a lot of people, when they're thinking about business school, they're thinking, wow, I'm going to get to study management and maybe some marketing and high level, you know, like how to be a venture capitalist or all the kind of fun stuff. But you need this kind of quantitative foundational coursework in, you know, accounting, cost accounting, finance. I mean, there's just lots of math. And in fact, you know, even in preterm, there's usually a statistics course. So lots to get to get through. And I would want to know, yeah, what on the undergraduate transcript of this candidate gives me evidence, since clearly the work experience for the last, I think we said 6 years, is not going to have a lot of, you know, of math in it. So that those were things that jumped out at me. But I do feel like on the whole, you know, this person has pretty stellar numbers and they have really interesting work experience. I think, you know, as we always say with politics, I don't know that I would write essays about, you know, a political point of view or anything of that nature. But just the fact that they've been working in government and have had some really interesting exposure means they're going to have a great voice in the classroom that will be differentiated from all the McKinsey consultants or investment bankers or whoever is, you know, in the class with them. So I think they clearly can get into a top school and they have some great top schools on the list. Yeah.
Ironically, this person has McKinsey as being a consultant as one of his or her goals.
Yes, exactly. Yes.
they want to become one of those consultants.
Right.
But actually, yeah. You do. I mean, obviously, we're harking on this one issue with this candidate, a potential issue which may not be an issue at all. They could come back and say, "Well, I've actually got all these classes in my undergrad, and I got A's, and it was all perfectly fine." But let's assume this candidate has a liberal arts degree, Graham, and doesn't have any or much quant-related coursework at all, and has time to take two classes, what would you suggest that they take?
Yeah, that's a great question. Now, speaking from personal experience as someone who majored in art history and had very limited quant on my transcripts from college, I typically, you know, recommend that people do either calculus or statistics. I mean, those are the two. And I know people are sort of like, well, what's calculus and statistics really have to do with business? I should be studying like finance or economics. But the truth is that because the core curricula at all these leading schools are quite heavy in finance and econ, macro, micro, they sort of expect you to come in with the sort of building blocks to excel in those courses or even in courses like accounting. And so taking stats and calc just gives you the kind of math foundations to sort of excel, because you're going to use all those skills in these other classes. So I would lean towards calc and stats. I, you know, if the person really wanted to take an intro course to accounting, I wouldn't say no to that either. But I think those are the areas to probably focus on. And, you know, what's great is that when I did this, I had to literally go to a school once a week and sit through a 3-hour lecture and do homework. And it was a big, you know, kind of time commitment at a specific time. And what's great is now, you know, candidates can do this stuff online with reputable universities and, you know, do it, you know, fit it in between other things they're doing in their life. So, you know, to me, it's a no-brainer. If I were this person and I had a transcript that didn't have evidence of kind of business-related subject matter or quant stuff, I would just go out, take a class or two, get an A, ideally, and then just show the committee that, look, I know I'm working in government, but I'm committed to going to business school, and I'm so committed that I'm already preparing by building these foundations.
And I have the self-awareness to understand that I need to do this stuff.
Yep, exactly.
Very well.
Yeah. Exactly.
But I think at the end of the day, we think this candidate could target the very top schools.
Agreed. Yeah, I love the background. I think it's really interesting. So let's move on to our last guest here. And this one is interesting in that this person is located in India, a female candidate who has a 329 on the GRE. A 3.5 GPA, 7 years of work experience, working in aerospace project management, And they are hoping to kind of head into consulting, maybe within the kind of, I guess auto, aerospace, I guess maybe manufacturing kind of domains. And the companies they're considering are Accenture, Deloitte, Ernst & Young, and Tesla. And so this person wants to start in 2020, and they have a number of target schools on the list. And this is kind of an interesting selection, which we'll talk through. But basically, they have Carnegie Mellon, Cornell, Duke, Emory, IMD in Switzerland, Indian School of Business in Hyderabad, London Business School, MIT, and Toronto Rotman, which so a lot of schools. And they did mention, and I know we're going to get into this a little bit, but it mentioned in one of the comments or exchanges we had with them that they're not really interested in working in the US after the MBA, and mentioned that they're married. And so working in India or Canada might make it easier for their spouse during and post. So in any event, this is kind of the background of this person. What was your take on this candidate? I mean, we see a lot of, folks applying from India, fewer females than males. But, I think there are a number of factors here that make this candidate interesting. So let's walk through them from your point of view.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, from a numbers standpoint, this person seems strong. 329 GRE. I don't think we have the breakdown of that, but I would imagine it's strong on the quant side. She's working in the aerospace, sort of engineering, project management. That all sounds actually quite good. Very strong stuff. And yeah, I mean, quite honestly, I think she probably has some pretty robust experience. And her list of target schools, I don't think are overly ambitious. Although, she might have one or two. You could say, MIT Sloan might be ambitious, or it might not be. Again, she might well actually fit well in Sloan's program. But she has some interesting constraint. Well, not necessarily constraints, but obviously, some candidates like this candidate are making decisions in terms of moving their family, and whether it's their spouse or their spouse and kids and so forth. So they have to make decisions to suit those family situations. So in her case, she wants to find a place where her partner can work. We don't know what sort of work that is, but obviously there's also going to be some immigration issues and various other things that come to play in that regard. So some interesting issues for this candidate, but I think overall engineering strong, and being quite realistic. It's kind of interesting that all the candidates we selected today took the GRE instead of the GMAT, which I'd only just realized as we've gone to the fourth participant.
Yeah, well, I guess the one of them took the GMAT last year, and then is reapplying with the GRE this year. But yeah, it is
It
interesting.
is it is
Yeah.
it is interesting, and I wonder sometimes if people are doing the GRE to leave options open for other types of degrees, which they want to make sure in their MBA application that impression doesn't come across. Now, if they're planning to do a dual degree where the GRE is relevant, then that's fine. They need to disclose that. But yeah, female engineer. She's, I would imagine, done well at work. So she needs to show that impact at work. That's something we always sort of hark on about. She's less likely to have strong extracurriculars. I would imagine, just given. With her lifestyle and so forth, and I think she talks about that. So that could potentially be a weakness, but nevertheless, I think that she should have some options. I have in my notes that I would have potentially considered Ross as a good fit, sort of going after that sort of engineering operations, that practical focus, with their MAP program and so forth. We are getting a little mixed signals from her in terms of US schools. So, she potentially might prefer to be in Europe or in Canada, based on her partner. So, I think she has to really figure that out, because I think she has potential in US schools, but it might not be practical for her living situation.
Yeah, it struck me. So she mentioned, I think, wanting to work in Canada or India. And so I was kind of like, well, it might make sense to look into like placement. So for example, of the US schools, like how hard is it to go from, say, Carnegie Mellon or MIT to get a job in say Toronto or something? Is that happening on a regular basis? Maybe it's, it could be that it's totally fine. But looking into that at least would be smart. And then when it comes to returning to India, I just would want to make sure that, she's really thinking through, kind of wages and just what, again, we don't have the full picture about how much debt is she going to take on to do this program. And then what are the salaries for the types of jobs she's targeting if she were to return to India. So that's all stuff to keep in mind. But I did think, 329, 35, super solid academics, 7 years of work experience. I mean, that's on the upper end. I did kind of, did raise an eyebrow a little bit, but I feel like a lot of the schools on her list are schools that really value work experience. I know MIT has always been really interested in having candidates with a rich background of work experience that they can share in the classroom. So, I think, the list of schools was challenging for me just because it is, it's sort of like, well, if she really wants to be in Canada, wouldn't, should there be more than one school from Canada on the list? How did IMD make this list? I was having trouble kind of piecing it all together. And, it could be that she's done more homework than you or I when it comes to like aerospace strength or something of that nature. It did occur to me, I don't know if she's considered this, but obviously when you think of some of the big aerospace players, you do have, Boeing in the US and they're out in, Washington State. So that made me wonder, should there be more of a West Coast focused or even something on the western part of Canada? And then if you think about European, aerospace stuff, there's actually quite a bit of that in France. And that makes me wonder, should an HEC or an INSEAD somehow be on this list, given, the mobility and the short duration of the program too. So anyway, there's some things to consider, but I like this candidate. And I think, there probably aren't a ton of aerospace engineer types in female aerospace engineer types in the applicant pool. So I think she has a lot to offer a classroom and just needs to maybe iron out the school selection a bit. And
yeah, no, I mean, that's the part that I found really attractive. Female aerospace engineer is not particularly usual. So she should stand out from that perspective. A very interesting candidate all around. Her school choice needs to be develop better, and she needs to make a hard decision on whether she wants to apply to US schools.
Agreed. Yeah. So that kind of concludes the profiles that we're going to investigate today in Wiretaps. When it comes to the other wires, at this time of year, there's some lingering activity on Livewire as we kind of close out the season and get ready for the next cycle of admissions. And again, most of it is still around waitlist stuff. I will say, I don't want to rain on anyone's parade, but Alex, we were discussing prior to recording our episode today that, a lot of the leading MBA programs have started preterm or they're getting into it within the next week or so. And so that means people are, candidates are showing up for business school. And I think the good news is that there may be a few that don't show. And so there could be a little bit of last minute movement on the wait list. But overall, I think we're really we're going to, see that process come to an end and candidates who are on wait lists are going to need to probably turn their attention to reapplication or to, other plans if they've already been accepted to another program. So in any event, that's kind of what's happening on Livewire. We'll be back as soon as possible. There's so many entries coming in on ApplyWire that we want to get to. So we'll be back with the next episode of Wiretaps. Please continue to rate and review. I know I feel like I say this every week, but I want you guys to give us some love on iTunes or wherever you listen. We love your reviews, love the ratings, and like seeing that we're kind of 5 out of 5 stars these days. And yeah, just keep it coming. And yeah, just try to stay tuned and, you know, provide us with feedback. We also are always open to your insights when it comes to a topic you want us to cover. If you have a profile that you're posting to ApplyWire and you really want it to be on the show, let us know. You know, we'll do what we can. So, Alex, thanks again for making time as always. And we will be back soon with another episode. Yeah, thanks so much, Alex.
Yeah, thanks for having me again, Graham. And good luck, everybody, as they get ready for next season's set of applications.
Yeah, indeed. Good luck to all. We'll see you soon.